Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Phoenix Business Radio, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studio inside Max 6 Workspace and the Conscious Capitalism Arizona headquarters in Tempe, Arizona, where we help build businesses and connect you with the right people. I'm Karen Nowicki, and today we are going to do just that. We're going to have a fun conversation around the fashion and purses and Eco Fashion Week, and I don't know, we'll see wherever else it takes us. Please help me welcome into the studio for the first time, founder of the Pina Project, Delaney Arhaus. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
We are very excited to have you today. And I always love it when we have a topic where I can invite back in a friend and a guest, somebody who's really making a dent and disrupting the industry. And in this case, today we welcome back Sherry Berry as my co-host, and Sherry's from Fabric, along with a long list of other accolades as it relates to her wonderful career. Welcome back, Sherry.
Thank you so much. Thrilled to be here, especially during Earth Week.
Yeah, it's perfect. So we had, you know, Dori Morales, right, with Green Living Magazine. We had her on the week before Earth Week, and we were just getting to talk about, again, sustainable resources and what she and the magazine and her community are doing to make a big difference, specifically here in Arizona, let alone worldwide. And so it's so fun to continue the conversation here today. Sherry, tell us a little bit about your background, if you would, and how you're showing up in the world right now and what's important to you?
So I started always wanting to be a fashion designer. Couldn't do it when I got out of college with my business degree. Ended up in retail, which most people who want to be in fashion end up. And 17 years later, had an opportunity to finally launch my fashion line. I thought I had a really scalable idea and went back to ASU, got my MBA, spent time in California at the Fashion Mart or the California Mart, learning everything I could about apparel design, development, and manufacturing. And then I went to manufacture my line and realized that if you're not starting off making thousands and thousands of pieces to meet minimums, which is one of the problems with the fashion industry and it being sustainable right now, it's just impossible to be able to launch a fashion line. And so I was really motivated about pulling together local resources here in Phoenix. There's a ton of amazing talent here. We've had schools training designers for decades, and there just wasn't any resources. And a lot of people who wanted to have resources so they could launch lines. And so I also met Angela Johnson, who's my co-founder. She's the matriarch, I think, of the fashion industry here. And we are of like hearts and minds and wanted to build a community, local resources to help designers sustainably grow their businesses right here in Tempe, Arizona.
And I know you guys are grateful for Tempe's partnership with you. Can I call it a partnership? It's just this neat symbiotic relationship.
I can't imagine how we could do this without the support of the city of Tempe. They are very visionary and very helpful. And I mean, really trailblazing in helping build a new industry that's in transformation right now for all the right reasons.
Wonderful.
I just want to ask you a quick question. So you said that you were starting your own line. Have you always been passionate about sustainability, or was there like a moment or something you learned, just some moment in time when you really decided that you were going to pursue sustainable fashion specifically?
I don't know if it was a moment of time. I think that my consciousness around sustainability and how to do it better has evolved. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember decades ago, it's going to age me a little bit, being in Soho where you could walk into the stores and the designer was there and they were hand making it and they had beautiful fabrics and textiles.
What an experience.
I mean, it was incredible, and I loved that. So mm-hmm. It's kind of a natural experience to what we're helping designers create right now today versus the what feels to me a very impersonal, generic shopping experience mm-hmm. today that, I mean, a lot of the clothes just don't feel like they have that same sort of art and craft that I love about fashion. It's why I wanted to be a designer. It's missing.
Plus, we've talked before, and actually just a few minutes before we went on air, about the waste and about the overage. Can you speak a little bit about what you're seeing in the industry worldwide?
So this is the second year that Fabric is sponsoring Arizona Eco Fashion Week, and we partner with the Julianne Global Sustainability Institute at ASU. And so there's experts there. And the fashion industry is the second highest polluting industry on the planet. If you've never watched the documentary True Cost, you really need to. It sheds a light on what's happening in the industry. And the panelists that we've had are educating us even more on something that we know. For example, there is an 8-year supply of clothing for everybody on the entire planet.
Absurd. 8-year supply. That blows me away.
Yeah, we're making about 100 billion articles of clothing for a planet that has about 80 billion people in it.
And to tie that back to what you said a moment ago about the loss of the art and the I'm sure there's a word, but where it's specifically mine or you as the designer, and I can feel you in that. That's loss in that overage.
Right. And also in a time when personalization is possible. I mean, everybody wants clothing represents who you are. When you choose to get dressed every day, it's how you feel. And I mean, it's a big part of your conscience and your happiness.
Yeah.
And your identity. And I think a lot of people are looking for stuff that fits them better. And, you know, they have an opportunity to represent their identity. So if you have local designers who are pulling product into the market because their customers are asking for exactly that, then you're not, you know, throwing a dart at a board trying to predict which styles everybody's going to buy. And you make, you know, hundreds of thousands of pieces and you put them in thousands of stores and hope they're going to sell. And even if you got it 50% right, you have all these garments that, where do they go? They end up in the landfill or they get burned.
Do we have to, when we make it more personalized, you know, can we be budget conscious in that same breath?
I think we can be, but the reality is that right now, and we're seeing this, in fact, we have a project, it's really ambitious. Apparel doesn't seem like it's a technology business, but we actually believe that technology can solve one of the problems with the fashion industry right now. There is probably not an industry that is still more labor intensive than the fashion industry. And because the race to the bottom is about price, that labor keeps getting pushed to the lowest possible cost. And, you know, that creates this whole human rights issue overseas. Mm-hmm. But because if you move that closer, which makes more sense from a sustainability issue, if you are moving that into the United States and you're paying people fairly. I mean, everybody at Fabric is considerably above minimum wage because they're artisans. They are skilled people. And so if you pay people fairly, obviously the cost to make that isn't going to compare with overseas, but you also don't have all of the markups between the factory and the brand and the brand in the store. So you can gain a little bit of margin back. But if we can bring technology into this, and a lot of it exists. It's just stitching it together. It's the difference between technology that can support a brand making 100,000 pieces or technology that can support 1,000 brands making 100 pieces each.
And then the artisan wins because he or she doesn't have to figure out where's the funding going to come from with this massive first launch or order, right? And then decide and see what the market needs and wants and shift from there.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the beauty is with the internet, the person who wants this specific kind of garment that fits them can find the designer to make it for them.
That is the beautiful thing about technology. We have that opportunity to just say, hey, I'm looking for this. And you know, usually within 20 minutes or maybe a couple hours, we can find.
The first thing you click, yeah.
Yeah, either I can find exactly what I'm looking for or I can narrow it down to a couple people who can help me figure that out. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. So I would love to learn a little bit about Delaney, and I'm hoping this kind of session or this conversation would be much like we're having coffee together. Mm-hmm. And I was excited that you were in town and I said, Sherry, oh, you've got to meet this young lady who's a designer and here's what she's doing. So Sherry, if you have questions for her and or advice and guidance, let's just play, right?
Exciting.
And Delaney, same thing, ask questions and let's just interact. So first of all, tell us who you are and kind of how you came to decide on this Pina project.
So I definitely was guilty of participating in fast fashion. I shopped from Zara and Forever 21 and tried to keep up with trends because I felt like I needed to. And it's funny you mentioned True Cost. That was a pivotal moment for me. I watched that documentary and I genuinely didn't know how bad it was. I think everyone knows that the fashion industry is wasteful and it's unsustainable, but I hadn't seen it or I hadn't, you know, really experienced it. And from then on, I quit fast fashion and I started shopping like only thrift stores or upcycling places that do upcycling. And I, you know, switched a lot of my lifestyle up. I started brushing my teeth with a bamboo toothbrush and I have a reusable coffee mug. And when I wanted to switch to handbags, which is really the only fashion item that I'm extremely passionate about, I don't like shopping very much. My style is very minimal. My color palette isn't extreme, but I am passionate about handbags. I couldn't find anything that was eco-friendly and in my style. So leather, once I learned about how terrible leather production is, was out. And then I found out that vegan handbags are actually made from plastics. And if they're not made with recycled plastics, then they're only contributing to the harm of the planet, which didn't make sense because they're promoting themselves as animal friendly. So I started doing some research on plant-based materials. Cork is one that's really cool as well. But again, I couldn't find anything in my style. So I asked around and found out that other women felt the same way. And I think with everyone trying to be more sustainable, it's important that there are shopping options for everyone of different styles. And that's sort of how the idea came about. And that's why these bags are here with me today.
How did you end up finding the textile to make those handbags out of? Sourcing is one of the hardest things that our designers face when they go into a design project.
It was a process. I found a small article online about a company in the Netherlands. There are two gentlemen who are about my age, and they've created a leather out of mangoes. And I thought that was wild and super cool. So I actually flew out to meet with them. They didn't expect me. I'd sent them an email, got a short answer back about, you know, we're really busy and email us later. So I did, never heard back. So I wrote a letter, sent mango flavored candies to them. Didn't hear back. I said, you know what? I really want to meet these guys. I have their address.
I'm just going to show up.
Yeah, I did.
I love it.
I knocked on their door and through the buzzer, I said, hi, my name's Delaney Arhouse. And they said, wait, from Budapest? We're eating your candy right now. I was like, great, let me in. Let's talk. And unfortunately, their material isn't quite ready, but that was my first introduction to this sort of fruit leather alternative concept. And it got me so excited. So once I knew what I was searching for, I found Pinatex, the material that my handbags are made from, much easier. And I started reading all about how they make the material. And Dr. Carmen Hermanosa, who is the one who developed it, it's brilliant. And I said, okay, that's going to be the material I make my bags from.
What a great story.
Isn't it crazy? I forgot about that. I think Madison had told me that. So it's crazy. Fascinating. And she said, I met these guys or I read about these guys and they're about my age. You do have to tell us how old you are. Because this is radio. They can't see how youthful you are.
I just turned 22 in November.
22. And your mom will probably kill me for asking this on air. But had you always been groomed to and, you know, be an entrepreneur, or did you have another career in mind? And I'm winking at her because I obviously know the answer to this, but I think it warrants a conversation around, you know, really who you decided to be in this world.
My parents are very open-minded, free-thinking people. And when I was 12 years old, they got the opportunity to move our entire family from Arizona, where I was growing up, to Dubai in the United Arab Emirates. And that was in 2008. So it was before it was this glamorous, fast-paced city. There was really one main highway. It was mostly desert. And they put me in an international school and I met tons of incredible people from all over the world. And I just learned that there are many, many different ways to think, many different ways to grow up. And there's not just one path for everyone. So I did have another career path in mind. When I was 18, I graduated from high school and I moved to Budapest to start medical school. And while I was in medical school, about a year and a half in, I got the opportunity to volunteer at a hospital in Ghana. So I moved to Ghana for a month, February, I think it was 2017. And in the mornings, I would be assisting the surgeon. So she'd say scalpel and I'd run and I'd get her a scalpel. And we were doing all kinds of breast cancer removal surgeries and things like that. But then in the afternoons, I would go and I would get to work with people in Ghana, for example, the prince or radio talk show hosts or actresses, and create projects for them to raise funding for this underprivileged hospital. And I found that I wanted to be a doctor for the wrong reasons, but I was very passionate about the projects that I was getting to work on in that business entrepreneurial space, creating ways to bring value to people. I think one of the most inspirational things for me is meeting people like yourself who can create something from nothing that people are willing to give their hard-earned money for because it's important to them, because it's valuable to them. And so that's when I knew that I needed to step out of the medical space and move into what I was really, really passionate about, which is business and building a brand around sustainability, because I'm also very passionate about the environment.
Well, I'm kind of in awe of your project. We've helped about 350 designers go from idea through production, and it's not easy. And we are on the radio, and there's these cute bags sitting in front of us. I wish everybody could see them. Tell us a little bit about how you designed this bag and what went into that, and how you ended up getting something so cute made.
Makes me very happy that you like them. Thank you. I love positive feedback. So the design was another process. Everything takes way longer than I assumed. Maybe it was my juvenile mind.
Enthusiasm.
Yeah. I thought, okay, I can make eco-friendly bags and by next month we'll be on my, you know. But I just started from an idea that I had. I was thinking, I don't know how familiar either of you are with designer handbags, but there is the Celine luggage tote, which if you don't know what it is, it's a trapezoidal shape. So it's a bit different. And I thought that would be cool as a backpack. And I've never seen that before. It turns out I'd never seen it before because women aren't interested. I put out surveys to women that I gave a rough estimate of who I thought my demographic would be, women between 25 and 45 who are interested in fashion and in sustainability. And then there are services online, Facebook groups and things that I reached out to, and I put out these surveys. And when I got responses, I would take those responses and alter the design based on what these women were saying. So they didn't like the shape. They wanted something more simple, either square or rectangular. So I made the personal decision to go rectangular and cut these corners here. I know people can't see the bag, but just make little details my own while making sure that it's still what women wanted, because ultimately that's who it's for.
So tell us where your business is at right now.
So stage-wise, I have the final design ready to go. I'm very happy with it, and I'm happy that other women are happy with it as well. But we will be launching a crowdfunding, a Kickstarter campaign this summer. It's going to launch June 20th. And I'm very excited about that. I think Kickstarter is a really cool way to see if people, if this is something people are going to get behind. I don't have to create the capital to get inventory and then find out that, you know what, people aren't actually interested in this. This is something that I can promote. And if it gets women excited and they back it, then they can get a bag and everybody wins.
So when you sit and listen, right, I'm like, hooray, go do it. I know nothing about this kind of thing, right? So if someone are coming here and, hey, I'd like to do a podcast, and I ask a handful of questions, we're 2.5 answers in, and I know whether this is going to work or not. And just tell us, do you hear people like what Delaney's saying? Do you have designers that come to you and say, hey, we're going to go the crowdfunding way, or we've surveyed people? I'd be curious if you're open to it. Yeah, just like, is she heading the right direction? What, you know?
Is it a good idea? Yeah.
And you're like, I don't want to break the news to you here,
but
your approach, I was nodding my head while you were talking, because your approach is really how a lot of new designers that are filling niche markets and offering more sustainable products that don't exist, get their stuff to market. I mean, the reason that fabric is, overwhelmed with customers right now or designers is because you can easily, and I think this is just in the last 6 years, but you can build a website from a templated source pretty easily. You can take your niche market and build a social media following, and it doesn't cost that much to market your product, and you can build this huge following. Once you have the following, you can, as long as you can get the product developed, which congratulations, that's not easy, you have. Now you can pre-sell on Kickstarter or GoFundMe and fund your production. And it's an amazing way to be able to put a niche responsible product out onto the market in the 21st century. And I really think that the fashion industry, which, you know, in the 80s and 90s and even early 2000s developed into these huge brands who then mm-hmm. opened up a whole bunch of proprietary branded stores to sell all their product, that in a world where everybody has realized the problems with that for the earth and our planet, that it's all kind of coming back to this more cottage industry, because with the internet and the ability for everybody to grasp the technology to be able to put a brand on the world wide web is here. And so your story exactly mirrors what most of the young entrepreneurs that come to us are doing.
Well, us young entrepreneurs, we're very privileged to have these technologies available to us, because like you said, it's really going to change, hopefully change the fashion industry as a whole, make it more sustainable with more and more people coming out with, you know, artisans coming out with brands that are eco-friendly and ethically made.
Right. I mean, it's exciting to listen to your story. I mean, that's one of the funnest parts about fabric is every day, I call it a combination of Shark Tank and Project
yes,
Runway,
yes.
because people come in with these amazing ideas just like yours. You know, I can't find a handbag that's made with something that doesn't make my skin crawl. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not cute and what I want. And so you have a great idea for a niche market, and you have the ability to launch it right now. And so it's so fun to hear these wonderful ideas of people making responsible products that are local and are a lot closer to what people actually want and need.
Delaney, do you know, as you've been working on it, what kind of research has gone into your price point? Not that you have to share the price point yet, but and I'd love to hear Sherry's opinion too. How important is that, right? I mean, I'm not a handbag purse. I'm the gal who finds a black purse, mm-hmm. falls in love with it, wears it until it's falling apart,
and then
I go find my next black purse, and maybe one that's, you know, a color. But just even switching things in and out between purses is a big task for me. So that's again why I invited the expert to come sit and have this conversation with us. But tell us a little bit about pricing, some of the struggles, some of the joys in it. Tell us a little bit about
that. So pricing, the way that I decided to go about deciding how much it should cost is, of course, finding out how much it costs to create one bag and taking that into account. But I really dove into Kickstarter and looked at other women who were making handbag projects on this platform and what they were able to successfully sell them for. And then I sort of just put mine kind of in the middle, even though I think with my bias against leather, I think my material is superior. And like you mentioned, you don't want to take all your things out when you need a crossbody or backpack. This backpack can actually be transformed into a clutch for the evening, a crossbody or a backpack, depending on what you prefer. So I think
I will own the red and black one at some point.
The color?
I've already decided.
That's a surprise, yeah.
Is it? Yeah, I'm going to branch out. I'm a little crazy.
So I also took that into consideration. I think this bag is more functional than others, but it's really important to me that everyone gets the opportunity to shop eco-friendly, and that's why it's styled the way it is, and that's why I wanted the price point to be affordable. I've seen handbags that are made from fruit leathers. For example, there's a company, not going to name drop, maybe, I don't know, who sell their bags made from apple leather for almost $800. In fact, I'm positive it's 875 euros. And I just think that that's really, they're missing an opportunity to really make an impact in the handbag industry environmentally. So I'm definitely going to take into consideration the fact that I want people to be able to carry them. And I've been, while I'm here, I'm showing them around to different aged women, women of different incomes, and talking to them about what they think it's worth to them.
It's funny you say that because when Delaney arrived here at the studio, I have one gal here in the studio that I just love to connect with. I'm like, you got to come see these bags. Kendra. And she's already like, oh my goodness. And then my team from Atlanta was here when we were doing Conscious Capitalism International broadcast last week. And one of the wives, Abby, was with us. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to tell you what Delaney's doing, and showed her a picture, and I've already connected them. They're lovely. They really are. And I just love that they're lightweight. I was just curious about the pricing because, you know, I struggle with that as a business owner too. You know, what I offer in working with business owners is so much value and so unique, but how do you price it well so that there's a benefit for me, benefit for them, and I don't price people out of the market, that sort of thing. So how often do you find yourself, you guys probably help people with pricing all the time.
It's actually one of the first steps that we suggest our new designers do. Angela offers a consultation and she teaches designers how to cost a product. Because it really should be one of the first steps, because if what you want to make is more than you think you can sell it for, or has a margin that doesn't make it worth your time, then that's probably not a project you should pursue. And there's a really tough balance here because consumers are adapted to the prices of manufacturing tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of items overseas. So, you know, those are the prices that they think, you know, stuff can be made for. And if you take on a project and you're making it responsibly and ethically, and you're doing it at fair trade labor practices, and you're making all the right choices, your product is not going to be priced in comparison to that same product that's being made in, you know, India or China or somewhere else. So what I think designers have to become more comfortable with is being very transparent about their product, what's in it, how it's made, why it's made, where it's made. And I really truly believe that there is a rising level of consumer consciousness mm-hmm. that is demanding those kind of products. So if you can just kind of put it out there and say, here it is. And I've even seen some ethical companies be as transparent as putting exactly what it costs to make that bag and then what they're charging
for. That's a great idea. That's a great idea. That's something because
again, as capitalists, right? As conscious capitalists, it is not only okay to make money, it's imperative we make money, because we are looking to be able to consciously help others come out of abject poverty, to help our neighbor. And yet, in order to do that, we have to make money, right?
Money. I mean,
it takes money. And you have to have a margin. So you have to decide what that profit margin is. So that's really cool to hear that companies are saying, hey, we'll be transparent. This is how much it costs for us to run this operation.
I love that.
And then here's what we expect to pay retail, whatever that is. Yeah, that's brilliant. So we've talked around a little bit around eco-friendly and ethically made. Mm-hmm. And I think you mentioned that was important to you. Will your bags then have that label? And what does that mean?
So when something is ethically made, it just means that the skill that's being put into it is being fairly compromised monetarily. And Sherry touched on this earlier. Ethically made, like, they're artisans. They have skills that not everyone has. I definitely could not sew these bags by myself. So in the EU, they have strict fair wage laws. So I knew that having my bags made in Europe would mean that all of the people who were making them were paid at least a minimum wage, but the team that I'm working with pays more because they also recognize that the people in their studios are craftsmen. And so all of the bags are handmade in a studio in Porto, Portugal. I got the chance to visit them recently and meet the team there, and they're wonderful people. The studio is bright and there's music playing and everyone's enjoying themselves, which unfortunately is a rarity in the fashion industry, especially if you look into the way that clothing is made for these fast fashion retailers in Southeast Asia.
I love it. Now, Delaney's a little different because, as she mentioned, she grew up at traveling the world. Like, literally, there was some new place they were exploring, and, you know, every 6 months or so. And what you and Angela have done at Fabric is help people keep it local, right? So this is a little bit of a stretch to connect the two of you, but I think it's really important when we look at what we're doing and where we want to be in the world and how accessible we can as we're building our brand, you've got some flexibility that maybe someone here in Arizona that's a designer just as committed or maybe even more committed than you wouldn't have the resources to hop on a plane and get where they need to go. And to Sherry's point, there are plenty of resources here in Arizona to create amazing brands. So I just wanted to point that out, that any thoughts that are coming to mind as we're talking, Sherry.
It reminds me of the story that you told about your business partner, Angela, trying to keep her fashion brand open when she had to move back here.
It's a great story. If you haven't listened to the other interview that I had the privilege of doing with Sherry and Angela, and Thomas was with us too, wasn't he?
He was.
That was a great conversation. That's when my mind was really opened up to how important it is that we kind of put a stake in the ground when we're representing industries and keep it eco-friendly and conscientious and helping people who are brand new in the industry come up alongside us, because that generation, this generation, I'm looking at Delaney, they're more concerned about sustainability, I think, than most of us are. And we've got to give them that spot to rise. And obviously we can learn from each other. Thoughts?
I agree. I mean, I think that the generation that's coming up is going to be the generation that's going to demand the kind of change that's needed for us to manage what's happening globally with our climate and our consumption and our behavior and everything. And it's not just a consumer end of it. It's a supply chain. It's a producer. And we're all citizens of the same planet. Mm-hmm. And when we come together, because we're demanding people be paid fair wages, that we have clean air, that we have clean water, that the fish in the ocean aren't choking on plastic. And I mean, that we don't continue to get ourselves in a place where global climate warming actually destroys our economy. I mean, we're all here being able to make choices, and little things make a big difference. And, you know, for us to be able to help brands that are recognizing that, to be able to go to market so that they can create something that's ethical and sustainable and provide that choice to consumers, and to be able to do it here locally. And, you know, I applaud you for doing it. It's not easy. And I mean, it's a beautiful bag. I love it. And, you know, congratulations. It's a tough thing. And, you know, but I think that, as I said before, I do think we're reverting more to what I would call a cottage industry where people can find and make choices that appeal to them.
When you were sharing early about the 8 years worth of clothing that could take care of everybody, right, around the world, are those clothing landing in landfills? I have this vision. I don't know if I made this up or if you and Angela shared it with me or something. I don't know, but I'm picturing these ships and shipments, containers being shipped off to countries that we, at some point, we paid them to put it in their landfill, and now they don't even have room for it. Am I making that up?
No, I mean, textile waste is actually one of the biggest problems that we're dealing with right now. I was on one of Dory's panels on Monday, and a brilliant woman who works with Phoenix Recyclables, textiles are one of the top issues on their list. Textiles are made with plastics and chemicals for the most part.
And they don't break, so they don't break down.
They don't break down. They end up shedding chemicals into the waterways. And if you're talking about a circular economy, plastics have to be made. They're highly petroleum-based. They're an environmentally destructive product to create, and they don't break down. And so, and most of the plastic that we're producing out there, I think it's like 8 or 10% of it is being recycled, and the rest goes into landfills, and that includes textiles. And textiles are even worse. And so I believe what I heard from the panel, and the number keeps increasing, so it's hard to keep up with it, but it's like 110 billion tons of textiles that is going into landfill. And what a lot of the fast fashion companies are doing, because they can't get rid of it now, is they're burning the clothes, and then you have that kind of, you know,
impact on our earth. Yeah. Holy cow. Right. So let's talk a little bit about, I think you called it Pinatex?
Pinatex.
Pina, well, of course, I should say it. Pina. Pineapple, pina. Yeah. Pinatex. So talk a little bit about that material and the qualities.
I would love to. I'm very excited about this. So Piñatex is, as I mentioned before, made from pineapple plants. And I called it the Piña Project because piña actually means pineapple in Filipino, which is where the pineapple farms are who provide the leaves for this material. So every year, 40,000 tons of leaves get burned at these farms just because they had nothing to use them for. They were just waste or they would be left to rot. And what the company who makes Piñatex, they're called Ananasanam, what they do is they, in the Philippines, collect these waste leaves, otherwise would be waste leaves, and they strip them down to their fibers. And they hang these long fibers of pineapple leaves to dry. And when they're dried, they take about 480 leaves per linear meter to create one linear meter takes 480 leaves,
wow,
which is about 16 pineapples. And they go through a process called felting, which means that it's compacted together with a bioplastic, which is different than these harmful plastics. They're made from corn starches and other plant-based materials. So it's also completely biodegradable, which it's funny when people hear that, they think, is it going to break down while I'm using it? Which that's not what it means. It just, as Sherry mentioned earlier, when it ends up in the ground, if someone were to throw it away, it doesn't leach those harmful chemicals or there's no plastic in it either. So the microorganisms in the ground can actually, and the bacteria and stuff can actually break this up. So that's Piñatex. It's brilliant.
How long have they been doing it? Do you know?
It is new, very, very new. She has been developing it over, I want to say, about 10 years, but I only found out about them a year and a half ago. And speaking of consumer demand, which is something I'm proud of the people who are demanding that these companies be more sustainable and ethical. And I think that the companies are hearing them. Big brands like H&M just did a conscious collection. And part of that conscious collection, they made this iconic jacket, which included Piñatex material in it. So even though it's new, it's becoming really popular, which I'm excited about.
You guys do a lot of things like that too, right? The whole just showing off recyclable fashions and some neat
upcycling.
Collaborative. Yeah.
She's wearing a skirt right now made from upcycled t-shirts.
Wait till you see photos, right? So this live broadcast, you can't see how cute these ladies are, but you always just look on the money. Yeah, it's a great, great skirt.
So I am committed to buying local fashion, and a lot of our designers are choosing to put sustainability into their fashion lines. I mean, actually, most of them are. It really is the trend at Fabric. We are doing Eco Fashion Week this week, and so we've had a week long of events, but we have the Fair Trade Show.
Attending, very excited.
That's tonight?
Yeah, there's a group of ASU students that have a fashion show at Fabric tonight. And then tomorrow night, there are 10 local eco-friendly designers on our runway, and then a group of designers that make a label called Refabricate. Those designs are made out of the cutoffs from our manufacturing for other designers because we're a zero-waste factory. They make beautiful clothes. Those will be on the runway, and then they're going to be for sale after the show. So if anybody's
super
interested.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's a little offshoot, but one of my favorites project is the work that you guys do with TCH with the banners. Can you speak to that a little bit? I don't know how close you are in on that project, but I just love Fabric and I love TCH. And every time I see these beautiful bags, I can't help but share and celebrate. Yeah.
So Fabric's a very inclusive community resource. So we want to help anybody interested in fashion design. There was a group of beautiful ladies from the Centers for Habilitation, which is a 50-year-old organization in Tempe that helps disabled adults find meaningful employment. And these ladies wanted to be fashion designers. And we're like, bring them here. And so
wow.
We have taught them how to sew and they actually design. And it was last year that they made a bunch of bags for our trade or our trunk show, which was last night. But last year they had some bags in there that they had made and they sold out. And it was the following Monday when Travis from the Julianne School of Sustainability came in and he said, I have this project. We have banners at Zero Waste. We want to make bags out of them. And I'm like, oh my God, can I introduce you to our team from TCH here? And would you be interested in supporting having them make these bags for you? And so this has become an awesome project. The bags are made by our young ladies at TCH. They have so much fun because they lay them out so that they look interesting. And then I can't remember how many pounds of banner has been diverted from the landfills right now, but it's a lot. In fact, the project has been recognized by Michael Crow for the Sustainability of the Year Award, which is coming up in May. So the entire team, the Arizona Apparel Foundation, which sponsors them in fabric, and the Julian School of Sustainability is being recognized at this award. And I mean, it's just this great thing about us supporting these wonderful ladies, for the school to have this wonderful sustainable project and then support having them make it, and then the bookstore supporting selling them and the community having a big demand for them. It's incredible.
It is phenomenal. And for our listeners, when we say banner, we're just think a banner at a university, some sort of convention or event. And what do you do with that? I mean, people dump a couple hundred, sometimes a couple thousand into these banners, and sometimes they're used for years, but sometimes for a one-time thing. Mm-hmm. And then what do you do with that, right? And so and the bags are brilliant. It's just a fun project, and it just makes sense all the way around. Yeah, love it. Yeah, any other questions that you have for each other as we kind of round out this segment?
I'm feeling very proud to be in the same room as you right now. That is just phenomenal.
It's mutual. Again, I'm so sorry that the audience can't see these amazing bags. Could you describe the material?
Sure. So it's very structured. The bag has its own shape to it. It stands upright with nothing in it. And it is a rectangular shape, so it is longer than it is taller. The material itself, it's not like a patent leather. It's textured. There's wrinkles in it. You can actually see, if you look closely enough, the individual pineapple fiber leaves. One of them is a paprika brown color, and the other is a black, and it's got gold hardware accents to them. The inside is fairly basic. It's an open space with one pocket, and the inside lining is made from 100% recycled PET plastic, so the bag is eco-friendly through and through.
Well, thanks. What you can't see is this material has a beautiful texture and feel, but it also feels very durable. It's incredible.
And it's lightweight, but it's so absolutely durable and yet very, very lightweight.
Water resistant. It's got a lot of great qualities. It's also unofficially coffee resistant. I accidentally spilled some coffee on it, but it's very easy to clean as well. So I just think it's a great bag with the added feature of being able to wear it however you want.
Again, admittedly, don't know the right words for this, but it feels to me like a classic design. And I kind of like to try other than the dress that I'm wearing today, I try to pick things that are really kind of timeless and I can wear forever.
Absolutely.
Along with my bag, same thing with my clothes. But would you say it's classic? It's classy, but it's also very classic and very functional.
Yeah, it feels very timeless and stylish to me, which is actually another important part of sustainability, is that you're making choices to buy things that you can use for a long time.
Right. I don't want something that's just in trend for a little bit and then everyone throws it away.
And you mentioned that it can be dressy, but it also can be casual. And that's kind of fun with the backpack versus the clutch or the longer handle.
Right. Yeah. So you really don't need a million different bags.
You're speaking to me. Well, this has been a blast. Again, Sherry, I want to thank you for coming and co-hosting with us. I really do love being able to kind of reach into my Rolodex, whatever that is. Do you know what that
no,
is,
I
Delaney?
Don't. I'm going to guess it's like a
I'm happy
contact.
I'm in it.
So back in the day, right, before technology, we had this round thing that sat on your desk, and they were like
index cards.
You do know, stinker. She's pretending that she doesn't know. And you would just put those important people in there, right? It alphabetized, and you'd go, oh, who's in my Rolodex? And that was always kind of the thing in business, right? Oh, yeah.
Sounds inefficient.
It was highly inefficient. Up until probably 3 years ago, I still had a version of that in like a recipe box. So it wasn't round that you'd spin.
My mom did
But
as well.
I did, because I'm still very tactile. I still need to, you know, I write my to-do list and I have to check it off. So anyway, we're getting on a complete tangent here, but this is one of my greatest joys, is be able to connect people who are like-minded, thinking and singing from the same sheet of music and having these candid conversations and lifting each other up. And again, I want to thank you both for sharing your stories with us today.
Thank you. I'm grateful to be with someone in the same industry.
Yeah. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure meeting you, and I love your bag.
Thank you.
Hooray! You've been listening to Phoenix Business Radio with Business Radio X, broadcasting live from within Max 6 and Conscious Capitalism Arizona studio. Some media leans left, some lean right, and we lean business. Until next time, I'm Karen Nowicki. Thanks for listening.